You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives. And joining us today are Lori Paternoster and Deborah Cheney. And they are here representing Lynx, the museum here in town. And if you're wondering what Lynx is or if you haven't been there, well, there's going to be a little bit more than just telling us about the museum, because we're going to learn a little bit about the backgrounds of museums, you know, because some people will say, why don't they bring this exhibit? Why don't they bring that exhibit? They don't realize what is involved in bringing those exhibits to town. But we're very pleased to have Lori and Deborah with us today. So thank you very much for being with us here.
Thanks for having us.
And let's start with you, Lori, first of all. As we were discussing out there before the program started, you've said this museum has been here already 7 years?
We're going on our seventh year now, yes.
Now, how did this come about?
Lynx Exhibits was a dream of mine and my husband's, Michael Churchman's. I'm a native El Pasoan, and we wanted to give something back to the community. We had young children, and we just thought it'd be a great idea to have a facility that the whole family could enjoy. And we had initially intended to do something along the lines of City Museum, which is in St. Louis, and it's a recycled playground, basically. And we drew up the plans. We bought some buildings right across from the convention center, all private funding. We took our retirement funds and threw it into the pot. And we came up with a plan, but then the economy hit, and it was the year that it really got bad. And so Mike came up with a great idea of becoming the only traveling exhibits museum in the country. And so that's all we did. We decided we would bring in some very first-class national touring exhibits that never came to El Paso because of our demographics. Most traveling tourists or traveling exhibits look for a certain economic base and a certain return on the entrance fees, and none of them would consider dropping their fees enough to come to El Paso. So we wanted to bring, like, The Body's Human. We wanted to bring King Tut from the Field Museum, some of those better-known things that El Paso would never see. And so that's how Lynx Exhibits was born.
Was that difficult to get people to go to? And the reason I'm asking difficult is because of the economy and because, as we know, that a lot of people who live here in El Paso do not make, six-figure incomes or even, $25,000 or above. So it's hard sometimes when you have a large family to get people to go to museums. But unfortunately, you have to pay for, the exhibits and employees, et cetera. So how did you cover that?
It's a unique culture here. As I said, I'm a native El Pasoan, so I'm very familiar with the Hispanic culture and the whole – what we recognize is we had to appeal to the whole family. So we tried to keep our prices low. We made package deals, family deals. We made it free for certain ages. We had special days. We had senior discounts. We did everything we could because as a private museum, we had to depend mostly on the entrance fees to support the museum. We weren't eligible for grants and that kind of thing. And so that was part of it. Part of it was making sure that people understood what we were doing in El Paso, that we were actually bringing something that was going to be of value to the family, and making them understand that an afternoon at a movie for a family would cost them more than a whole afternoon in a museum. And making them recognize that the benefit of the time that they spend as a family was worth that investment.
Joining us as well is Deborah Cheney. And Deborah, one of the things that is fascinating about museums, and especially for children, is, well, children like to touch. They like to explore. I remember, taking my little girl, who is now 24, on walks. And, she would stop like every 5 minutes to look at this ant and just explore and explore. But some museums, they put a limit on that because they'll say, don't touch. And they have these guards, looking very intimidating. So
we don't
it
have
makes
that.
Children feel like, oops, I don't like museums.
We have our docents who engage the families at each exhibit to try to tell them it's okay to touch. Touch this. Oh, look, you passed this. Come back and try this. This is super cool. And it was right about the time of our fourth or fifth exhibit that we settled on, we found the right formula of exhibits with hands-on, touch, interactive play, and that was with the Grossology exhibit. And that was the exhibit all about the impolite science of the human body. And that was a riotous, fun, go down the slide shaped like a tongue and land in the intestine and, ooh, isn't this fun? And look, Mom, this is the coolest thing. I mean, that is when we settled on that formula of hands-on, touch, and learn at the same time. You know, and ever since then, we've tried to bring in exhibits with hands-on elements for all ages. I mean, not just the young kids, but the teenagers, the parents, and the grandparents that come with these multicultural or multigenerational families that we have here in El Paso. And we have if the exhibit content skews a little young, we add informational content that would appeal to the older family members. If the content of the exhibit skews older, we add interactive hands-on elements or puzzles or games that fill in the content for the younger so that all family members stay engaged in the exhibit.
Next year, it's hard to believe that it's almost next year, you guys are going to go through some changes. You want to tell us about that?
Sure. We are expanding, and I don't know if you've ever been to our property. Right now we're in the one-story building on our campus, but right next door on our same property is a lovely two-story building that is being retrofitted right now, and we're going to fill that in, and it's going to be called the El Paso Explorium. And it's going to be a living laboratory for children with some prototypes of children's exhibits that are going to go in all kinds of different areas. We're going to have construction, high-tech, airport and flight, and then a pretend play village circa 1890s, 1900 of what El Paso was like in your great-grandparents' time.
And when is this all going to kick off?
The grand opening for the El Paso Explorium is January 26th. It's a Saturday.
And as far as people getting involved in all of this, do they need to purchase tickets in advance? Do they pay at the door? And especially if they're going as a group, I would imagine for that kind of situation, you would probably want to get a call in advance.
Correct. Groups, we request a minimum of at least 15 people in the group, and at least probably about 2 weeks' notice is usually best. Further out, if you can give us more notice to have a preferred date, for example, Friday mornings fill up really fast for field trips. I mean, I have no Fridays left practically. So, you know, if you want a Friday date, I would give us as much notice as possible. We can extend a special group rate to the groups that meet that criteria of at least 15 people and 2 weeks in advance, and that's $5. But for families just coming, you can buy general admission tickets at the door. And for the Explorium, we're going to have new pricing. For the Lynx exhibits, currently it's 10 for adults, 6 for children. Babies 3 and under are free. And then if you have military, students, or senior citizens with ID, it's $8. January 26, we're going to transition to new pricing, and it's going to be $8 for ages 2 to 59. And then it's going to be $6 for seniors and military with ID. And then babies, toddlers, 2 years and younger will be free.
Lori, one of the things that you know, we heard a lot about, especially during the election, was about, you know, the ballpark and quality of life and some people complaining that there just isn't anything to do in El Paso. Other people saying, yes, there are things to do in El Paso. You just don't know where to go, et cetera. Bottom line is, as I mentioned to you earlier, coming, you know, from Houston, the fact that, you know, they have a museum district, and people are saying, why can't we have that kind of quality of life in El Paso? And we have to start somewhere. And obviously what you guys are doing is a step in the right direction. So what would you tell someone who would, quote, complain about the fact that why can't we have those things or there's nothing to do here in El Paso?
I would tell them to get in their car and come downtown. we have a museum district now. It's growing. It's very exciting to be working downtown now. We're very close to the art museum. On the other side of us is the transportation museum, which I would wager most people in El Paso don't even know is there. Mm-hmm. And they can see great exhibits on the trains and our past as far as that's concerned. We have the Holocaust Museum is nearby. We have the History Museum, which is constantly moving and changing.
Oh, and the Union Plaza District is being revitalized, totally revitalized.
And I think that's the issue. Now that we've got a baseball stadium going in, we've got this new museum for children, people need to get in their car and come downtown. And I think that that's what I would encourage them to do because, as I said before, I'm a native El Pasoan, so I have seen the changes in downtown. And the next 5 to 10 years, downtown's going to be remade. It's already started. There's a lot of private investment. That's what we're so excited about because as a family, we made that commitment to El Paso. We've been working with the city for 2 years to get this off the ground while we're experimenting with our living laboratory and educating El Paso to the excitement of a children's museum and what's possible. The city will be building a new building for a children's museum. And one of the things that we're really pushing because of sort of that negativity that's been going around is we want people to get involved. So we're going to make every avenue possible available to them at this exhibit where they can vote. They can come tell docents, I really don't like that exhibit, or have you thought about having this, or can we try bringing in a bed of nails, whatever. We're going to have opportunities for them to voice their opinions. We've created a new Explorers advisory board for kids 8 to 18, and we're asking for kids to call us and give us their name, age, and a paragraph about why they could benefit, why they would be a benefit to a museum in El Paso and how they could help develop the future for kids here. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun because it's going to be for El Paso. It's going to be something that, you know, they're developing and they're telling us what they want.
For kids and by kids, you know, let the kids vote on what they want to see in their museum.
A lot of people have been asking and wondering what's going to happen to Insights.
My husband and I sat on a committee through Paso del Norte Group, which pulled together some experts from the community, including people from Insights. A consultant out of Springfield, and myself and another individual from Insights went to Columbus to a Science and Technology Museums Association to see what other groups were doing about the future of science museums primarily. When I came back, I came with a lot of information and resources for them to consider. One of the things that I was told constantly is that their best bet at this point was to become a museum without walls. And their consultant has also suggested that they do that. When they close, they're going to start putting their resources into developing some kind of program to go into the schools. And we feel like that's going to be a great companion piece to what we're doing because they'll be in the schools getting kids excited about science and technology. We will have the physical presence that the kids can then come to on the weekends with their families and do more in the science and technologies. And then at the point that the city opens their museum, we'll have this whole culture built up and educated and ready to go and excited about the future.
As far as bringing in exhibits, and I see here that one of those exhibits, Tech City, yes. Tell us a little bit about Tech City.
Tech City is the type of hands-on exhibit that we were discussing earlier where you can touch and do everything. But this one focuses on solving real-world engineering problems and seeing how engineering and design affect your everyday life. You're going to be able to design, build, test, and modify your structures. You know, you're going to build a skyscraper and then shake it down with an earthquake and see how you can build it better so it withstands the earthquake. You know, same thing with the suspension bridge or building a dam to withstand a flood. You know, how engineers work, how they think, you know, how they use mathematics and design in their process.
And one of the things we're learning more and more in the museum field is that we need to start our children young in terms of opportunity and professions.
To start young, I mean, start them when they're young with the hands-on aspect, then they can go into the school and learn through the school and follow up with their teachers with an interest, maybe doing a science project or something related to something that they saw in the museum. But starting that interest not only in science, technology, engineering, architecture, and math at a young age, but a love of museums. Because you start at a fun place like a children's museum, this living laboratory, but then as you get older, you would probably want to go see what's in that history museum or what's in that art museum. And you're more open to the idea of the different types of museums. And we have several here in El Paso. Lori already mentioned the Holocaust Museum, but we have an archaeology museum. We have a Border Patrol museum. We have an International Museum of Art. We have the Art Museum and the History Museum that are right near our campus. And Lori mentioned we have a railroad and transportation museum half a block from us that I guarantee you I tell people about. And they're like, I've lived here my whole life and never knew we had that, you know?
The exciting thing, you were talking about the traveling exhibit, and the exciting thing is that kids can come in and play, and they don't understand that they are learning about a potential future opportunity. If they're building a building and shaking it on the earthquake table, they're learning about the relationships between nature and the building that they just built. So that might excite them at some point to become an engineer, to become an architect, to maybe learn more about weather patterns. And it opens up a whole new world to our kids that we don't have. We're the biggest city in the United States without a children's museum. And it's been a long time coming. It's something that we desperately need. And I think once El Paso comes and sees how exciting it is and sees how much there is to do, then they're going to be believers, and then they're going to see the effect on their kids, because I think it's going to open doors to these kids that they've never had opened.
And I think you're absolutely right as far as, that the children not realizing that they're learning while they're having fun, because back at least in my time when I was younger, BC, before cable, the channel that we would watch every Sunday night, The Wonderful World of Disney, and yes, they showed cartoons, but a lot of times Mr. Disney would take us through the human body or all these different things about cells, and a lot of those rides at Disney World and Disneyland are exactly what you were talking about earlier. And the fact that, the kids are realizing that, wow, you know, look, I didn't know that the stomach looked like this or that the cells did this, et cetera. But yet they're learning and having fun, not realizing it. As far as going to get those exhibits, because we know that traveling exhibits and a lot of the exhibits that we read about in Time Magazine or Smithsonian Magazine, et cetera, are expensive. They're not cheap. And, of course, as you mentioned, Lori, you're considering not just the fact that our children and our community is being entertained and also educated, but also that they can afford to go to these things. So how difficult is it, both of you, as far as looking out there and seeing what's available? And is it kind of like in the concert area where the artists are looking at big markets and or if they're in the area, they might consider coming? How does that work?
It's exactly like that. When we started, none of us had that experience. But our dreams were to bring these top-ranked nationally traveling exhibits here, and we quickly found out why. If you can get it between sites, mm-hmm. then that's a great opportunity, and they want to have it traveling, so maybe they'll work with you. If you can take it for longer than maybe they expected you to, then maybe they'll work with you. Deborah has been a tremendous asset in terms of finding out what exhibits are out there. She links every exhibit we have to the TEKS alignment so the teacher can walk in and get handed a whole lesson plan and connections to everything they could possibly want. The Explorium already has like 14 pages, I think, of TEKS alignment, so teachers could actually teach from our materials for weeks. What we found, as Deborah said earlier, is as we went on, we needed more interactive exhibits. So we sort of found a niche. Other museums create their own exhibits that they travel. There are a few companies that do that. But again, you just have to be at the right place in the right right time. You have to negotiate the terms, that kind of thing. We had budgets. We found that, you know, we had to trim expenses in some mm-hmm. place to be able to allow us to get a bigger exhibit in another place. So,
and it's like matching, you know, over the last 5 years, I've developed a bookmark list of almost 200 venues that do traveling exhibits, but it's like matching puzzle pieces. Mm-hmm. I'll find the perfect exhibit that I really want and Lori really wants and everybody really wants to come to El Paso, but it's not available till 2015.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or it's too small to fit our large space, or too big to fit our space, or it's not in our budget, you know. So it's like matching puzzle pieces to get the perfect fit.
And another big puzzle piece is the teachers, because mm-hmm. we work very, very closely with the education system in El Paso, and we ask the teachers, what do you need? What's not being taught enough of, what do you need to complement what you are teaching? And then they'll tell us, you know, we need more of a biological science. So we'll go look at exhibits that have that involved in it. Right now, STEAM is the big issue, all the science, technology, and math. So we're looking at what in the exhibit can fulfill those needs for the teachers.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I thought, well, of course, it's my field, and that's what I teach, and Dennis as well, and communication and social media has become just, you know, so phenomenal. In fact, Dennis and I were discussing an article, recent article, that there on friends, there are different kinds of friends now, because you have real friends, and then you have virtual friends who you meet by texting or being online, etc. And I was wondering if you're planning to use any of that, because one of the things I noticed when I went to the Museum of Fine Art in Houston is they had an area there that if you had your phone, you could download an application, and by going to every certain areas, you could tap that app and find out more about the
mm-hmm.
exhibit.
We're actually pretty excited about that. One of the areas in our new Explorium is high tech. And as part of this conference I went to, we talked a lot about the social media. And so we are going to be purchasing some tablets so that we can use them with the docents and the customers to show them the relationships between what they're doing and what apps are out there in the technical world. The thing that you have to be very careful of is that doesn't replace the experience. And so we're going to be training them to show, for instance, if you're doing a paper airplane, there's an app that shows you some great ways to do paper airplanes. So they might show them, okay, hey, let's try this one, and then they turn it off and put it away, because it has to be about that physical experience and about what they're learning there. You don't want them to go back and get drawn away by an app. It's got its place, and we're definitely in the social media world. We have the Facebook and the Twitter and all that, but there's nothing that can replace that hands-on experience. And with your grandfather there and your little sister there, there's nothing that can replace that familial experience in a museum.
I think that one of the things that you mentioned, Deborah, is the part about 1890s El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be a fabulous exhibit for the people in El Paso, because I know for my part, I love history, and my daughter just loves, like, you know, the 17th century,
mm-hmm.
the 18th century, excuse me, and World War II, and you know, just the vintage. And you're seeing a lot more clothes out there, stores selling vintage clothes,
right.
and the fact that, you know, my grandma used to wear this and all that stuff. So I would imagine that would be a big hit.
I hope so. It's one of the sections that's got me the most excited with my history background. But, you know, we're going to have a little Pony Express stable where kids can get on little kid-sized ponies and ride them. We're going to have a little bank. Turn of the 19th century bank. We're going to have a general store where they can go in and see, you know, for example, couldn't 120 years ago walk into a store and buy ready-made clothes on the frontier. You had to buy bolts of fabric and make it yourself. So we're going to have fabric, we're going to have vegetables that they can pick out of bins, and, you know, sacks of beans that they can weigh on scales to weigh their own material, and then one of those old-fashioned cash registers where they push the button and ring you up. And then we're also going to have a one-room schoolhouse, Frontier Schoolhouse, you know, that they can go in and learn their lessons on chalkboards instead of pencils and paper.
And when is this exhibit going to be open up? And
January 26th. It's going to be one of the four components inside the Explorium. It's going to be there. And then in phase two, we hope to open that up to so that the village, you're going to have these four components of the village, but you're going to turn the corner and then you're going to walk into a 21st century El Paso. So you'll have a 21st century bank to compare with the 1890s bank.
Now, the exhibits that are going to be in the Explorium, mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's the new name mm-hmm. of the exhibit, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the
mm-hmm.
museum.
Mm-hmm.
Are these going to be permanently there, or are these just going to be they're like traveling exhibits?
They will be permanently there, but we will be, like Lori had mentioned earlier, allowing the public to vote on something that is most popular or least popular. And as we move forward into phase two and three and onward, we may replace something if something's not working. As far as, you know, nobody's paying attention to this exhibit, we'll take it out and replace it with something that somebody's requested specifically. So they're going to be permanent sections, I believe. We're going to keep high tech, but you know, you can come in 6 months later and there may be new stuff in high tech that wasn't there the first time, or the airport adventure. You know, maybe the climb on helicopter isn't such a popular deal. Maybe we'll replace that with something else. And the El Paso Village, you know, perhaps nobody really liked riding those ponies and we'll replace it with pedal cars or something, mm-hmm. you know. You don't know, but we're going to leave it all open. This is really a museum for the public. We want them to have a say in what's going to be in this museum.
Getting back to social media and what we were discussing earlier, people like to look for websites because they want to know what's available, what's mm-hmm. there, how do I get there, etc. So I assume that you all have a website?
We do. It's lynxexhibits.com, and LYNXEXHIBITS.com.
And we're going to be keeping that one, even though it's Explorium, because we've worked for 6 years to make sure people know where we are. And we felt like it'd be better to have that for a while. We may switch over eventually, but now it's Lynx.
And if people are saying, well, those were a lot of letters you just read out, what's a phone number that they can call for
the
more information?
The phone number is 915-533-4330.
And I just want to remind people that we are still open as Lynx Exhibits through January 6th with In the Dark, which is an exhibit about nocturnal animals in the backyard and in caves and in the ocean. And it's a very hands-on exhibit right now, and it's been very popular with the public. And that one will be open still Tuesday through Sunday through January 6th.
Well, we'd like to thank you both very much for taking the time to be with us here today and give us kind of a lowdown on the Lynx exhibit, but also look into the future and also look into the past, because we're going to go into the future and the past with the Explorium, and that is going to be taking place in January. But if you need additional information, you can call 533-4330. That number again is 533-4330. Lori and Deborah, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louie.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.